What a complete mess that Eli had allowed Hophni and Phinehas to make of God's house and his worship. These were the people who were responsible for leading all of the other people in the true worship of God, according to the law that had been handed down. But they had instead adopted many of the customs of the idol worshippers around and into God's service in the temple, and had put their own desires and profits ahead of God. This morning, what we want to look at here is 1 Samuel chapter 2. We'll look back a bit at 1 Samuel chapter 1 and a little bit forward at 1 Samuel chapter 3 and try to get a sense for the context here and what's happening, the state of affairs in God's house and in his ecclesia, the people of Israel. We'll look at how each person in this story, how their service was to God and to the ecclesia was affected by this sort of status quo or the way things were. And then we'll kind of, as we look at that, we'll consider each one of these characters and which ones maybe we can relate to and which ones maybe we would like to be able to relate to. And then at the end, we'll look at the offer that God has made to us in the in Samuel chapter 2, where the man of God speaks and talks about a priesthood that serves his anointed forever. We'll look at that promise and how we link into that promise. So we'll start off with the state of affairs. As we said, Eli had allowed Hophni and Phinehas to really serve themselves at the expense of God's service and at the expense of the people whom they were meant to serve. We're told right away at the beginning of the story in 1 Samuel chapter 1, the beginning of the story of Hannah and Samuel, that Hophni and Phinehas are priests to the Lord. And so we see that God considers this very important context for us as we start to read through this story of how Samuel becomes a prophet and a judge to God. 1 Samuel 1 verse 3 says, "Now this man," speaking of Elkanah, "used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord." So we see that this is kind of the context that we start off with. And so we get more information about what we're supposed to learn from the fact that God tells us that as we read through chapter 2 like we did today. Picking up at chapter 2 verses 12 through 17. "Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. The custom of the priest with the people was that when any man offered sacrifices, the priest servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand and would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. This is what they did at Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Moreover, before the fat was burned, the priest's servants would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, 'Give meat for the priest to roast, for he will not accept boiled meat from you, but only raw.' And if the man said to him, 'Let the fat burn first, then take as much as you wish,' he would say, 'No, you must give it now, and if not, I will take it by force.' Thus the sin of the young man was very great in the sight of the Lord, for the men treated the offering of the Lord with contempt." We see in verse 22, "Now Eli was very old, and he kept hearing that all that his sons were doing to Israel, and how they lay with the women who were serving at the entrance to the tent of meeting." We know that this was one of the practices of the idol worship around them, and they had incorporated that right into the temple service. And later on, just a few verses ahead of that, as Eli tries to tell his sons, "Look, this isn't right," they ignore him, and they refuse to be corrected by Eli. The situation is so bad in chapter 1 that we see that when Hannah's offering this really heartfelt prayer, and she's sort of speaking in her head, but her lips are moving in the tabernacle, Eli assumes that she's drunk because it's such a bad state of affairs that has been created by his sons that he would just assume that there's a drunk person in the tabernacle, right? And he chides her for being drunk to begin with until he realizes that, in fact, she was giving a prayer. So if you can, just imagine for a moment being an Israelite at this time. You know that God has laid out these laws, and he set them out, obedience to them, as sort of a determining factor. He says that's how things will go for them, that if they follow him, they'll be blessed in this land. And if they follow the laws that he's laid out, they'll be blessed. And if they don't, there will come hard times for them that will try to bring them back. And so imagine yourself an Israelite in this situation, trying to figure out what to do because your leaders, your priests, have totally corrupted the laws. And sort of think about how you might react and put yourself in the position of these different folks in this story. The first people that we're going to kind of look at, and we've started to look at them already, is Hophni and Phinehas. These are two men that had a very important role. They were the spiritual leaders of the people of Israel, of the ecclesia of that time. They were taught the law from a very early age, and they were given a mandate to follow that law and to create an environment in which the other people around could follow that law and could worship their God as God has intended. Instead, these two figured that they had some sort of carte blanche to rewrite God's laws as they saw fit to better serve themselves, and they created a false religious system under the guise of worshiping God that incorporated, like I said, the customs of idol worship and really just served their own desires and their own wants. I think, you know, if we look at them at its face, it can seem hard to relate to them, but I really think, you know, sometimes we can find ourselves in this position, sort of redefining pieces of God's worship to better suit our own needs, and thinking that perhaps the reason God revealed his truth to us is because there's something special about us, that somehow that puts us in a position to make up or change the rules of what God might find acceptable to better suit our own situation, to better meet our needs. Now, hopefully, it doesn't get to the same extent that it did for Hophni and Phinehas, but I think this is sort of a slippery slope, and it starts small. We make little exceptions here or there in the way that we serve God just to make it more convenient for ourselves. I think the Pharisees are a great example of this. They started off very well-intentioned by building rules around the law to help make sure that they didn't get close to breaking the law. And by the time Christ comes, they'd established a completely different set of rules around the law that mostly was dedicated to serving themselves and really making life better for themselves. And they had redefined sort of what God's rules were and were condemning people for not following their rules that they called God's rules. And so I think, you know, Hophni and Phinehas are sort of an extreme case of that. But it's a slippery slope, and we can find ourselves sort of making these little compromises. And I think we have to be careful not to find ourselves in the position of Hophni and Phinehas sometimes. The next group of people we want to look at is just the people of Israel in general. What information? We have a little bit of information about how they responded to what was happening here in the temple. And we have at least two groups of people that are identified for us in the chapter, and there's probably a few others that we can imagine. Definitely the women at the gate of the tabernacle represented a group of people who decided they were going to follow the lead of Hophni and Phinehas. They thought, for whatever reason, it'd be better for them to do the things the way that Hophni and Phinehas wanted to do them. And I think, you know, sometimes it's easy for us to find ourselves in their position that, you know, you have leaders, you have people who are supposed to be the example, and sometimes it's easy to kind of check out and think, well, I'll just follow them, right? They've made the decision, and, you know, I guess this seems okay to me, and I'm just going to follow along, especially when, you know, maybe it seems easier or somehow maybe it's better for us, right? And so I think that's one trap that we have to watch out for. That this group sort of represents is the group who just kind of follows along and just doesn't really think for themselves. There were others who are sort of the opposite, who didn't go along. They did their best to continue the true worship, and they resisted the changes the brothers had made to the offerings. We look in verse 16, like we read, that there were some people who said, no, it's not right. You can't take the food before it's been cooked. You can't take the fat, the best part of the offering, before it's been cooked. You have to follow the rules, and they were forcefully made to comply with the brothers' new rules in the temple. Additionally, you have, it seems, people complaining to Eli in verses 23 and 24, hoping that he would rein his sons in. Eli hears this report about all the things that his sons are doing, and so it seems that there were people who were upset about what was happening, and Eli had heard about it. So Hannah and Elkanah, I think, definitely fall into the camp of people that tried to continue to do their best to serve God the right way in spite of that poor leadership they were getting from the brothers. And we'll talk a little bit more about them specifically in a moment, but I think that's a tough spot to be in when, you know, to do your best to serve God when you're surrounded in an environment like they were that is all set up not to serve God properly, and you're sort of find yourself in the minority. So we'll talk a bit about them in a minute. And then I'm sure there were others that just gave up, that, you know, looked around and said, wow, this doesn't look right. I'm not going to come anymore. I'm going to stop coming to the tabernacle, and I'm going to just disengage from this whole situation because it's not right. And I think this, too, can be an easy trap to fall into, to sort of judge the power of God by the effect that it has on others' lives. Right? And I think it can be easy to get discouraged when people who are supposed to be our examples fall short. But I think it's important to remember that all of us are human and none of us will ever entirely get it right. And our faith in God has to run deep enough to not be shaken by the poor examples of people around us. The next person that we're going to look at is Eli. And Eli is an interesting character. I think he seems to me, at least, to be someone that seems like he was torn between what he knew was right his feelings for his sons, and the benefits that he seems to reap from their misbehavior. At times we see him as a righteous priest, serving as the mouthpiece of God. He blesses Hannah in chapter 1 and assures her that God has heard her prayer. He continues to bless her and her family as they visit Samuel year by year, saying that, you know, he hopes that God will continue to bless her with more children to replace the one that she has dedicated to God's service. And when Hannah decides to dedicate Samuel to the service, Eli takes him under his wing. We see in verse 11, the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. And I mean, it could have been easy for Eli to say, oh good, you dedicated him to the Lord, good, I'm going to stuff him with my sons and let him just help out with what's going on around here, right? But we see Eli does the right thing and takes Samuel under his wing, puts him into the service of the Lord. It seems like maybe he thought there was, you know, an opportunity to do things right with Samuel that he hadn't been able to get right with his sons. And there's multiple instances where Eli provides good, sound counsel and training to Samuel as he grows. He teaches him to perform priestly duties in verse 18 of chapter 2. And in chapter 3, instructs him about hearing the voice of the Lord. And you see that Samuel's right there with Eli in chapter 3, there in the tabernacle, performing the duties. Well, it seems clear that Eli knew what was right and could instruct others. For whatever reason, he chooses not to restrain his sons when they depart so dramatically from the right path. In verse 25, Hophni and Phinehas completely ignore their father's warnings about how they're behaving. And in spite of this, Eli continues to allow them to serve as priests. He had the authority as the lead priest and the responsibility to take them out of the service of God, but he refuses to do that, even though he sees the effect that it's having on the people, and he knows that it's not right. God says through his messenger to Eli in verse 29 that Eli honored his sons more than God, and that he had been made fat with God's offerings. So clearly, Eli was benefiting from his sons' illegal modifications to how they got their food from God's offerings. Multiple references to Eli refer to him being heavy or fat, that he had begun just, you know, sort of had access to all the really nice things in the sacrifice that were supposed to go to God and become obese because of it. We also find that in the prophecy, God prophesies that Eli will become blind. And almost immediately after that, we find in chapter 3 that his eyesight is beginning to go. We know that blindness is a common side effect related to untreated diabetes, and that obesity is one of the risk factors for type 2 diabetes. It's possible that, you know, the way in which God's promise comes to pass on him is as a result or a consequence of his gorging on the food that was not meant for him, benefiting from the misbehavior of his sons. In some ways, I don't know, I think Eli might be the easiest to relate to in some senses, because really he must have convinced himself that he was doing what he could. He was doing what he should. You know, he sat his sons down, he told them, look, you guys need to stop. You know, God's judgment is going to come on you. You really need to stop. And, you know, he must have thought to himself, well, what more can I do? They're my sons. They're the next in line. They're meant to be the priests. What more can I do? And I think it's difficult sometimes to be aware of the, you know, emotional attachments that we may have that can cloud our judgment, especially, you know, in his case, where we might be benefiting in some way from the way things are, and we may not want to change that status quo for other reasons. I think God makes it very clear, though, when he speaks to Eli, that there's no such thing as sitting on the fence. You don't sort of get to sit back and say, well, I know what's right, and I've told them, and so I've done my job. You know, either you're with God or you're not, and God makes that very clear for Eli. The last examples that we'll look at are sort of this small family of Hannah, Elkanah, and Samuel. And we have this really good example. Hannah seems to be a very godly woman, and Elkanah definitely supports her in the decision she makes and the way in which she reaches out to God. Elkanah seems very supportive of that. Samuel latches on early to the teachings that Hannah gives him and continues to commit to that promise that Hannah made early on in his life, to serve the Lord and be dedicated to the service of God. So, you know, Elkanah brings his family to the temple each year for their sacrifices in spite of the situation that's going on there. In chapter 1, it's specifically referenced that Elkanah gives meat to both of his wives to offer in the tabernacle. And I think it's immediately after it says that Phinehas and Hophni were the priests in the temple. And so I think God's trying to bring our attention to the fact that they would have run into this immediately, right, when Hophni and Phinehas are taking the meat when they're not supposed to, because it says specifically that Elkanah gave meat for the offerings to both of his wives. Hannah still believes, in spite of all this, that God has the power to help her and brings her problems to God in prayer in chapter 1. And she makes a vow to dedicate Samuel to the service of God. And Elkanah supports her in that vow. They give Samuel into the service of God at a very young age, possibly as old as 3. I want you to think for a minute about a 3-year-old and whether or not you would feel comfortable giving your 3-year-old to serve at that tabernacle, knowing what was going on, whether or not you would have the faith to believe that God, and me as well, I don't mean to say you like you, but you know, whether or not we would have the faith to put our child in that situation and believe that God was in control of the situation, that God could bring about a good outcome, and that was the place where our son should be to learn about God and to learn about service. So I think that's a huge amount of faith that Hannah was able to demonstrate, that God was truly in control of the situation and that it was not Hophni and Phinehas who were in control of the situation. Each year, Hannah makes him a new priestly robe to wear, and she continues to show support to Samuel and to emphasize the importance to him of the service that he was performing by giving him this new robe to wear each year. And Samuel, in spite of his surroundings, chooses to focus on the good and to learn about true service to God. He chooses to focus on what good Eli can give to him and what good Eli can teach him. He respects Eli very much and follows those instructions that Eli gives. Doesn't follow the example of Eli, but follows the words that Eli puts out. And his obedience is noticed not only by God, but by the people around, and he begins to be very respected. It's mentioned several times in the chapter as a contrast to the brothers and their performance. You see that the chapter kind of iterates back and forth between, you know, here's how bad it was, and here's what Hophni and Phinehas were doing, and Samuel grew in the Lord and grew in reputation with the people. Hopefully, you know, we find ourselves most of the time relating to these characters in the story, that even though they walked a hard road, they had the faith that God was truly in control in spite of the way things looked, and that, you know, it was God's expectation that they would continue to come and to worship him in the right way in spite of what was going on around them, and to continue to support their ecclesia, their brothers and sisters, in the best way that they could. They dedicate Samuel to that service. I think as we sort of turn our minds to Christ now, we see that Jesus had many of the same circumstances as Samuel. His birth had miraculous circumstances, just like Samuel's. He was dedicated to the service of God at birth for his entire life, and he chose to commit to that and to follow through on that, just like Samuel did. He dealt with a corrupt religious system that had grown into a place where it was serving itself instead of God. And he made the choice to learn what he could from the elders at a young age. We know that at the age of 12, he stayed behind in the synagogue to learn from the elders. Even though they were part of that system, he learned what he could from them. And he chose not to follow in their poor example. Jesus died for us so that he could invite us into God's family forever. In verse 35 of the chapter, when the man of God comes to speak to Eli, God talks about, through this prophet, about raising up a priesthood that would serve his son forever. In our reading in Revelation 5, we look in verses 9 and 10 and see that that too is our hope by the grace of God, to be priests in the service of Christ forever, in the service of God's anointed. So let's remember that no matter what challenges face us in this life, no matter what bad examples or relationships we may need to deal with, that really this life is temporary. It's a short, short time compared to eternity of service in God and service to God. Let's choose to live in a way that clearly demonstrates that we want to be part of that next life. We want to eternally be part of God's family. And let's make that choice today in this short time so that we may live forever in the service of God.